Greetings, and welcome to the Thirsty Mage, the podcast that's happy to be back in the pub with a pint after spending so much time in the colas. I'm your host, David Lloyd, and before we start this week, we just want to give a great big congratulations to the Talk Nintendo podcast for hitting their 200th episode. These two gentlemen have not missed a single week of talking about their favorite console and chicken wing sauce, and 200 episodes is an incredible achievement.
Thank you. I will say, though, just to get the record straight, only one of us has been on all 200. but yes, thank you.
Okay, let me just say this. There were at least a couple, if not like three, where Casey was on there for minimum, and I took the rest of it. So let's just put that. Yeah. Fire Emblem Light episode.
Well, yeah, but that was your fault.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But there's another one where you got on and you had to leave. There's a couple more where you had to leave. The proof's out there. I'm not lying here. You had to get on, then you had to leave, and then I did it with, like, Alex Kulafi or something.
Perry, you know where Casey definitely has you beat? That's in number of episodes that he's talked about World of Warcraft.
That's true.
So don't even try to catch him. Don't even try to catch him up on that.
Well, we can fire it up, start talking about Shadowlands if you want.
Oh, is that an expansion?
We're getting off the rails here, though.
Well, we better get back to the top. Yeah, we are getting... No World of Warcraft tonight. Maybe another day.
Shadowlands, oh my god.
Tonight, for our fourth crossover, we're discussing an original NES game, Star Tropics, currently available on the Nintendo Online service. But before we get into it, let me introduce first the person most likely to be swallowed by a whale due to his proximity to the Pacific Ocean, reviews editor at Nintendo World Report, Jordan Rudick.
Man, I was so happy to finally play Star Tropics. Like, I remember playing it as a kid. It is a brutally difficult game, which we'll get into. But being able to play it on the Nintendo Switch Online with the rewind feature, oh man! If this were a VCR, I would have broken the rewind feature like 10 times over. So, well, yeah. Not that I'm terrible at video games or something, but this is a brutally hard game. Really fun though. Really
good
fun
stuff.
Yeah.
And as we alluded to, he's done 200 podcasts for the Talk to Nintendo podcast, and probably 30 to 40 at his favorite RPG pub, the better half of the Talk Nintendo podcast, Casey Gibson.
Howdy ho. It's a pleasure to be here. I got my Americola with me. I put the Pepsi aside for tonight, but yes, I'm ready.
Ready for another podcast. And finally, let's not forget the other half of the Talk Nintendo podcast. Hard at work making games over at Atui LLC, it's game designer extraordinaire Perry Burkham.
It's me, and I've been on 199 episodes. You know what stinks is, like, I had a thought, like, maybe I should do, like maybe I should release, like, episode 201, like, secretly, but I don't know how to post to the server. Only Casey knows, so I can't even do that.
I've got all of the power.
Yeah, he does.
200.5 episodes.
Yep. I guess I could just ask you, David. I have the login info. Okay, we'll talk after the show. No, I'm just kidding.
It's the same server. We're all good.
That's right.
Perry, the trick is you do episode zero, not 201. You do zero, and that's how you catch up to Casey. And I'll hop on that phone for you if you want to.
All right,
we'll talk about World of Warcraft. It'll be great.
Oh, my goodness. I love this idea. To be honest, I love this idea.
Hit me up. We'll talk about it.
This is going to be great.
World of Warcraft from the perspective of two Jimmies who've never played it.
Yeah. The Jimmies are the ones who haven't played it. Right.
Yep.
All right, so
Casey, you're the one who's not going to be on episode zero. So
see, but now that you've blown the surprise, I'm recording episode zero after we're done here. Gonna have it uploaded, and then I'll be up two on Perry. Okay. But again, we're getting off the rails here, guys. I mean,
that's okay though, because I'll just have David delete that episode.
Well, speaking of Jimmy's, maybe we'll start with the cola trader himself for the first drink of the night.
That's another t-shirt I want to get made, cola trader. But I'll have two. It'll be cola trader, like like Trader Joe's on the front, and then on the back it'll be Traitor, t-o-r, so it'll have like Pepsi on the front or Coke on the back or something like that. It'll be great. So speaking of Coke and Pepsi at the same time, I did something very silly today in honor of, yes, like you said, David, the cola. So all of the islands you visit in Star Tropics end with the word cola, like Americola, She Cola is the castle that only
has
Coracola, yeah,
Canadacola.
So there's a, that's right, yeah, I'm sure that's one of the hidden islands in the game, right?
Greenland cola.
So in honor of all the colas, I decided to do something I've never done before, and maybe not for a long time. I got a Slurpee, and I mixed it half Coca-Cola and half Pepsi-Cola.
Oh, no.
I thought you were going to talk about some sort of decaf.
Did you explode the gas station?
No decafs and no gas stations. I went to a... they're called Circle K. They used to be called Max Convenience.
We got Circle
K. I don't know if you guys have Circle... Okay.
Did you maximize your convenience with Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola?
It was not convenient because I had to go to two different stations. But I'll tell you what the worst thing was. The most inconvenient element was they were using paper spoon straws. And if you try, like, the straw lasted like 5 minutes, right? Because like obviously
paper straws. What a joke.
You're constantly like chewing through it and stuff like that. Like I just grabbed one of my own like plastic reusable straws that I've got at home and I'm like, okay, this is much better. But
I would rather make like a straw out of like curling my hands into like an O and like sucking through my hand than use a full-on straw.
Things you never thought you'd hear Perry say or anyone say.
I'm writing this. This is gonna be a topic on episode zero. Let me write this down.
Sucking liquids through
your hands. Hey, supposed to chug those Slurpees anyway.
At least Jordan isn't trying to put himself in my mother's shoes.
I think we need to go on to the next drink.
that's what you said last time, and I almost spit my drink out while you were talking. Because you're like, Casey, if I could put myself in your mother's shoes, and you're like, huh, I never thought I'd actually say that.
I said that?
Yes.
He's blacked it out of his mind.
It was brilliant.
If the problem with these crossovers only happening once a month, I really can't remember what even happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'll take your word for it. I'm going to have to go back and listen. But
it was beautiful.
Yeah. What about you, Casey? What do you got tonight?
I've just got some good old-fashioned H2O. The hour is late. I've got work in the morning. So you boys got to stay hydrated. I did have my coffee beforehand.
Being responsible.
I preemptively had my non-decaf to keep me going, though.
Mm-hmm. Now, I meant to ask, do you guys get a holiday, because 4th of July falls on a Saturday, do you get like a holiday Monday or something like that?
I think most of the businesses are observing it tomorrow. Normally, I work on Saturday, so I'm just switching it up, so I'm working tomorrow. And then having the whole weekend off, which is nice.
There you go.
Okay. There you go. Perry, what have you brought?
I went out during our break and I got a Diet A&W cream soda. It's amazing. And actually, the escapade of getting this cream soda on our other segment of Mystery Anniversary that we recorded with Neil. It's funny. I don't really know. Is this going to be on our 200th episode? We didn't really talk about it. It might be a little too big. We're probably going to save this for 201.
Oh, yeah, I think
so. If you want a six-hour episode, then yeah, it would be.
This could be part of episode zero.
Nope.
Yeah.
No way. Casey's on it. Casey can't
be
on
episode
zero.
Can't tell Casey anything anymore about episode zero.
Uh-huh.
Casey's trying to take ownership of it.
Got to lock it up. Yep.
Well, that brings me to the only gentleman drinking beer, and it's... this week I've got a Hefeweizen. It's a it's the French one, so it's tricky. La Malcommode from La Voix Malte. And a Hefeweizen, I looked this up because I'm sure Jordan was going to ask.
Yes.
It is, it's a white beer, like a wheat beer. Mm. But specifically, the what makes it a Hefeweizen is that it's from, uses wheat or yeast from Bavaria. And it's similar in the sense of being like a wheat white beer, but it's specifically from Bavaria. But it also has hints of banana. Oh, what is it? It is banana and clove.
Well, the banana fits very well for the theme of our episode, so kudos to you for that.
But yeah, that's what a Hefeweizen is, basically a white beer, but specifically made with Bavarian yeast with banana and clove, and sometimes vanilla hints of flavor in there.
So I've been waiting 65 episodes to have this opportunity. I can correct your German with your beer there. Remember W's in German are pronounced as V's, so Hefeweizen, right?
Ah, okay.
So next time you go to get another Hefeweizen, you can tell them that Jordan taught you how to say that.
My dad's butchering names, you know.
That's right. Well,
it wouldn't be a mage if I didn't butcher.
It's your fault for not taking Canadian beers or American beers, right? You always got
to
go fancy.
Yeah, I was
going
to say he's got French. Those pinkies out.
Got to be a fancy boy.
Yeah.
How is the beer, David? Like the hints of banana sounds kind of wild to me. Like that doesn't sound like a fruit that
would
go
in
a beer, but
Yeah, you don't really taste it too much, so it's more of like a hint of it more than anything. You certainly don't smell the banana or really taste it. It's more of like a bit of an aftertaste, but
gotcha.
Yeah, this one was good. Yeah. It's again, it's the light beers are kind of the summer ones, so
mm-hmm.
I've been going with those. And then I actually was at we have a specialty beer store that I don't get to as often as I like, and I happen to be by there, so I bought the entire summer's worth of podcast beers. They're all, I've got the whole summer lined up now, so
he's ready to rock. A man who's prepared.
That's right. All I gotta do is throw her in the fridge the day before and we'll be all set.
Beautiful.
So
I guess the more difficult thing is just making sure they last.
Yep. Yes,
2 weeks from now, you're like, I drank them all.
Yes.
Well, Casey, that's what happened at the start of the quarantine. Like David said, oh, I'm going to buy all my beers for the quarantine, and here we are now, and he's already gone through them all.
Double dipping.
Now it's stocking up for the podcast.
No, they didn't. They didn't last that long. So.
Yeah. you bunch of drunks.
Let's hop right into the game for this week, Star Tropic. So, like we said, it's a game that was originally came out on the NES, and was the unique in the way that it was developed in Japan by Nintendo, but was only released in the West. It was a pretty interesting game. It harkens back to the days where the physical media was important, mm-hmm. because you were not going to beat the game unless you had the instruction manual mm-hmm. handy.
Yeah,
and then destroyed it.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's right.
Nintendo's way to prevent Blockbuster from renting out the coveted Star Tropics that everyone was rolling in to pick up.
Mm. I mean, I think they were. I think when this game came out, I think it was like 1990. Like, I remember a lot of people. Like, I mean, I was very young at the time, but like, people were interested in this game. Like, it seemed really unique setting. The box itself was kind of nondescript, but the idea, you know, of another kind of Zelda-like game set in like a tropical island theme, it seemed like a match made in heaven, I guess. And I think there was a lot of demand for this game.
I was going to say the weird thing is, though. I mean, I guess. Like you said, in 1990, I was a whopping year old. so it released after the Super Nintendo, you know? So I was figuring more people were probably clamoring to get into, you know, the new hotness, if you will, opposed to Star Tropics. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very impressive game. I mean, you know, putting it on, it's funny. So, like, my initial thoughts of the game are, like, this is a super, like, you know, impressive game with, like, it's like where, you know, feels like almost RPG-ish, and you know, you go in and the graphics are actually pretty good, the music's really good,
really good,
and you know in a lot of ways, and you can just tell like those late NES, like, you know, you can tell like the black box games from the late NES games, you know. And like the Super Mario Brothers to the Super Mario Bros. 3s. And this definitely felt like a Super Mario Bros. 3 game era. And but then what's so funny though is like how this was made by Nintendo and how relatively clunky the controls are.
Very much so. Yeah.
like, interesting, like, this came after Zelda, and I think Zelda controls, like, a billion times better. Like, you know, there's, like, this delay when you move, you know?
Well, yeah.
Like, when you turn.
Yeah, because, yeah, they let you turn before you actually move. So, yeah, you need to actually, like, hold it down to move over. I guess, you know, sort of to work with the projectiles, like, oh, I can aim without having to worry about moving. Because it's all grid-based, right? Like, everything is a grid. Right. So I think that was the reasoning there was like, all right, you can aim in any direction real quick and easy, and then and you don't have to worry about falling, which obviously is pretty punishing with a lot of the gaps and stuff, you know.
If I was designing it, you just hold down B and then release it to do, you know what I mean?
That would the movement also is very deliberate, right? If you think about like jumping on the tiles, like if you jump wrongly and you jump into the water, it's an instant death. So you have to be very kind of thoughtful about how you move.
Ridiculous.
It is. I mean, it's one of the reasons so hard, right? Because a lot of the times you are, there's a lot of dark rooms, or a lot of enemies. Yeah, you could very easily, and you will in a normal playthrough, I think you will jump into the water a bunch of times. It's just kind of the nature of the game. Again, we said thank goodness for things like save states and the ability to rewind with this the Switch Online version. But yeah, it's a tricky game. I think the movement is something you definitely have to kind of master to have a chance of getting all the way through. It's a very challenging game. Certainly not for casual players. Like I think you, I would even say it might be harder than Zelda 2, which is Adventure of Link is a really tough game in its own right.
I think the thing that makes it more challenging though is that they put a lot of situations where, like they're trying to make you fail. Mm-hmm. Like I think it's. I felt like this was the movement was a little bit easier than Zelda 2, like the combat and stuff was a bit easier, but what drove me nuts was the number of traps, you guys had just mentioned about going into the water. Well, there's rooms where you go into a room and you don't know that it's an instant death. Like
yes,
you're jumping
yes,
into
yes.
water.
The old gotcha.
Like, more than one, like there's a few instances where that happened, and it was like you said, if we didn't have the rewind, I think I would have threw the controller through the television because there's just so many times that happened, that just drove me nuts. And
but it's funny though, I do want to say the first of all, like the game is like a conglomerate of like 10 games together, and and it's also the style, the gameplay loop. The setup is really unique because you expect it's kind of like Zelda and Mario put together, where it's like it's level like chapters, right?
Yeah.
But they're like levels.
Okay, so can we do all of them?
Totally
can we do all of the references or all of the kind of the way that we're reminded of other games by this one? So like
absolutely.
So okay, Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest with I think it looks exactly the same to me when you're looking through the town, even the character design and everything, it looks exactly like Dragon Warrior.
Yeah.
And entering the buildings and stuff, the way that like you kind of the ceiling kind of disappears and you see what's inside.
Yeah.
I think it's the same. I can't imagine like
they copy and pasted the code.
It feels like that, honestly. When you destroy all the enemies in a room and one of the walls gets destroyed, that's Blaster Master, isn't it?
Like I was just going to say, this game is so Blaster Master. That's the first thing I thought of. I mean, just going into
the different
the cave
styles,
or going into and then it going to that kind of like over-top isometric type view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it totally. And it totally kind of, and just the way that you're controlling and you can see the big, juicy, chunky sprite, you know, just like in, that is definitely the one I got, you know.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, obviously the first two Zelda games are a huge part of this as well. Just the way you see the hearts kind of on the overworld, the hearts that kind of raise your life container. I mean, the menu, right? The classic the beginning menu when you select your save file and you name your save file. It's exactly the same as the original Zelda game, right?
Yeah.
Like that is copy and paste, exactly, right? Like,
I love how you can enter in your name for the file save, but then like it's still just Mike Jones in the game. Like, nope.
Yes, yes. No one's going to call you by that name.
Because I put Jerry.
Like, and they really
it's like putting your name on food in the fridge.
Like, what'd you say, David?
It's like putting your name on food in the fridge.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, yes, you can just change it anyway. Yeah. It's funny because they really make, and they don't even really need to make a big reference to the name Mike. What they just like always do, they're like, Mike,
yeah,
you got to go over here.
The ace Mike, pitcher. You know, it's like the,
yeah.
Yeah. Ace pitcher, Mike Jones.
So good. So good. And then
you're beautiful. It's so bizarre. And that's what I was going to say is the other one is Earthbound. I think that this is very, there's a lot of Earthbound references, just like, you know, the baseball bat and just the way that just the weird take on Western society through a Japanese lens, I think, which is something, one of my favorite things. I love that. You know, just the bizarreness. I love that. So the whole game, and then like, you know, the weird like overworld, like there's kind of like three, you know, I guess the overworld, you know, getting into the submarine and that kind of stuff and going through and finding hidden passages and, you know, totally just, I don't know, kind of reminds me of Super Mario World, just kind of like finding hidden things in the overworld. And anyway, it's just it's a pretty, but you can see like coming together, like I love how like when you beat the final boss or the bosses that are ridiculously hard, that second boss, like, oh my goodness, the squid that shoots at you.
Did you freeze him? Did you freeze him with the snowman? That's trick.
That's the easy.
How do I do that?
You got to find the item.
You got to find.
Oh, I got it.
You find a snowman item. Okay, so to use items, you have to press start and then press down, and it shows a whole nother item menu. And so that's...
Oh.
It was so frustrating. Like, I got to the dark rooms. I didn't know how to use the torch.
I picked up the snowman every single time, you know, because that's how I went through. But it's like, I didn't... Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Anyway, but after you beat the... I like how, like, you're done. It's like, oh, good. You know, but like there's like a little mission each one. And it's like, yeah, oh, your you point, did this. You gotta, and then... Oh, your points add up, and it's like okay, points. I guess it's like a high score game. You know,
the
it's like
points adding up. The points adding up in a game like this is so weird, right? It's just weird to have points in a Zelda game.
I feel like they were probably
right?
like, yeah,
I love
people
it actually,
love
though.
Seeing the points rack up. It's, I mean, like it's well, sort of like yeah, the Mario
I
games.
Like
it doesn't really matter, right?
I think you're right.
Yeah,
I think you're right, Casey.
I think it's fun because to me, it kind of encourages like I'm gonna play through this again. Like I feel like if I were to beat this game. Then coming back, it definitely would be a game like, I want to play through Star Tropics again. And if the game did keep track of your points for like this run, it's kind of like that roguelike type, that mentality of like, I want to get a new high score in High Tropics, in Star Tropics, which isn't a super long game. It's not like crazy long.
It's not that long, no.
And if you know what you're doing.
The final chapters are very short.
Because they're definitely...
Not with rewind feature anyway.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, there are definitely spots like where... It's sort of not really clear where to go, especially like the overmap. Like I remember when, I think it was just early in the second chapter when you're just sort of like, okay, I'm heading this way, and it's like, where the heck am I going? And then it's like, oh, let me look closely. You can sort of see that one little block is
there's
actually
one
a little
look
different,
very closely.
And I could
there's
go underneath
one pixel.
It now.
Yeah. I actually love that. See,
I hate that.
I actually love that because I think that's a lot better. That's a lot better than like Zelda, which is like there's no hint. It's
bomb
like you just gotta bomb this one thing. You know what I mean? So I do like it's like I was like, oh, there's a hint. Thank goodness, like
they've learned.
Thank you so much for not, you know. And I didn't actually have to look up anything while I was playing, so I kind of that passes the. No, I'm saying that passes the Jerry test for NES games. It's like any sort of adventure game on the NES. Like get your, you know, like your wiki ready.
Yeah, have the walkthrough ready to go.
I mean, I don't think it's fair that Perry has this second sight to be able to see like hidden passages. You know, like that just making these games super easy. But for the rest of us laymen, like
as
trying to designers,
we're dumb.
Trying to find like some of those hidden passages where there's really no hint. You just have to push into a wall and hope that there's a passage on the other side, right? Like it's a little frustrating like that there's a fair bit of trial and error in this game in terms of the exploration, right?
You can see all of the hidden passages.
Not all of them. No, not all of them.
Oh, you can't see all.
The one with the fountain on the other side, the fountain that takes you up to the top of the mountain, you cannot see that one. Like you have to infer it. Because on every side of that that room that you can't get into, there's a door except for the side with the fountain.
Well, there you go.
So you know that the only way to get there, in theory, is by pushing against the wall. There has to be a hidden passage, but there's no visual evidence of it. You have to kind of just learn that from walking around the room. So
That's the same. That's the same with the submarine and the whale.
Yes. Yeah.
Because
that's right.
you there. So there's places where you can go underwater and it's there's a visual cue. But then you get to a point where it's just a dead end, and it's like, well now where do I go?
To YouTube.
And then, yeah, you have to push against... Yeah, pretty much. Well, that's the... You know what's... I grabbed the walkthrough basically from, like, the first minute because the dang guard wouldn't get out of the way of the hut, and I'm like, why won't this... Like, I know I need to go in there.
David, RPG rule number one. Talk to everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Aren't you the thirsty
I'm
age,
in
David?
A rush.
I know, me too.
I have no time to talk to every
well, that's
NPC.
Funny. That
but you do have time to grab a walkthrough.
Well, that was, yes, I totally talked to who, it was one of those, I talked to everyone, or I thought I did, and I was like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Like, why isn't this working? Let me go see. And then I, watched, a Let's Play or whatever on YouTube, and they talked to everyone, and it went, and I was like, I guess I missed someone, and then I went back and talked to everyone again, and then it worked, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah,
that poor pig.
It's a funny thing. Like some of the villages, you do have to talk to everybody. Some of them you don't. You can just talk to two or three specific people. You wouldn't know exactly who it is unless you've played the game through. But yeah, it's kind of a funny. I mean, that to me really reminds me of the RPG element of the game, that you talk to everybody, and some of them have really silly things to say, like, "Oh, I'm the second oldest person in all the islands. I'm 180 years old." And it turns out one of those people is actually lying, like they're not the second oldest. But I don't know. There's a kind of humor and charm to the game's writing, especially.
Oh,
like,
yeah. So, what is everyone's history with this game? I mean, the first time I played it literally was today. I mean, literally. Like, I've always wanted to play it. I've always been interested in it. You know, I remember listening to it on RFN, years ago, about, on the old episodes, about them talking about it. Always been interested. Never had the time to sit down and play it. That's why I'm really glad we recorded this, because it's a really cool game. But what's Jordan, you seem to know a lot about the game.
Yeah, so I probably rented it, a handful of times when I was younger. I never owned it. But I don't remember ever getting all that far. I remember the squid boss. I remember using the snowman when I was younger, but I probably didn't get much further than that. I think I may have even got stopped at the point where you need the passcode for the submarine. So what happens is like we were saying earlier, there's a physical letter inside the box version of the game. And so if you rent the game, you don't get that copy of the letter, right? You just get the game and maybe like a plastic case or something like that.
Oh,
so,
really? Mm-hmm,
yeah. So you there's
but
a physical
they
letter
in this one, right?
They give it to you. They just give it to you. So
now, did you notice the dates?
It's in wait. What do you mean
it's
they
in the
gave
digital
it to us?
Manual? No.
Yeah.
Oh, freak!
Wait, what?
Oh, okay. David,
I guess maybe. Wait,
just
is that,
it,
are you talking
David?
About in the beginning of?
I just googled
wait, hold
it
because
I'm like, where is it?
Are you talking about the beginning?
I thought they took it out
of chapter 2. Is that what you're guys talking about? When you get the submarine?
No, not the beginning of chapter 2.
No, you need to put in a frequency.
Chapter 4, I think.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's 3 or 4. Because they give you a 3-digit number, 747. And the way you were going to get that originally was you dip a physical letter in the game box in water. And so after you've done that, it reveals the code, which is a really, really cool idea, right? Like,
how do you know to do that, though? Does it tell you to do anything like that?
Something in the game talks about letter and water.
It does. Okay,
so,
good.
I mean, still, but imagine being like a 5 or 6 year old kid getting this game for Christmas or something like that, and then like realizing that this is part of the solution to something in the game. Like that idea of the physical contents of the game having a purpose inside the game is such a cool and novel idea. It feels like a treasure hunt or something. Like you're like a pirate looking for like buried treasure. Like I just think it's a really cool concept.
Yeah.
And we're never gonna have something like that anymore.
No.
It's really one of those relics of like the 80s or 90s. Like
you know what's so funny is it, for some reason, it kind of reminds me, and I don't know if it's really jumped out and it's really random, but there is that Chibi Robo 3DS eShop only release.
Yeah.
And it was where you had to take pictures of stuff to match it with stuff.
Yes.
And one of those things was like for instance, like an outlet. And I thought that was so neat because you actually have to find, everyone has an outlet, but that it kind of reminds me of that thing where you find common shapes and what is something that's common. And, I guess they probably had to change that for all the regions, for all the different kinds of outlets and stuff. But that kind of reminded me of stuff like that, where you're actually going to the real world and using things like, I guess like an AR game, right? Is what it is.
Yeah.
So I thought, that's kind of cool. So, but nothing like they should definitely do that now. Like, you know, like a games publisher should do that right now.
Yeah, if like Limited Run or someone like came out with like, yes, okay, we're gonna release them, we're gonna re-release Star Tropics or some some other game, and like, yeah, you know, we actually even have the physical. Like if they did stuff like that, it'd be really cool, right? Like,
be amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just a nice little thing that this game now, did that was special. Like,
it is. It was really cool. And did you guys notice the codes at the beginning of the game? You know, where you get those two codes, the numbers that you get, like to get the dolphin, you know, to get to at least talk to them or something. I don't think they're random because my codes were 1492.
Oh yeah.
And then which is that's the date Columbus found,
right.
And then the other one was 1776.
Yeah, yeah. They're very much on purpose.
America.
That's hilarious. Yeah, isn't that? I was like, that's hilarious. Yeah.
These I mean, it's funny that, I mean, that kind of speaks to the way that this game was developed with America in mind, right? Like it released in Europe as well, but it's very much a game targeted at the United States, and there's a lot of like references to that, although there is one reference to the UK. I don't know if anyone heard it. This would have been a good clue
when they said fish and chips.
Nope. So there's a musical theme that plays in the game when a certain event happens. Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
I don't know. No, so, I'm not sure.
David?
I can't remember. I'm
chapter 4 or chapter 5, there's a boat you need to sink into the water. Like this captain like crashed his boat or used his boat block off this inlet or something like that. So the end of the chapter, it involves like you sinking the boat so you can drive the submarine through. And as the boat is sinking, the game plays God Save the Queen. It's hilarious. It's so random.
That's
but
hilarious.
It plays this like beep boop, like 8 chiptune version of God Save the Queen. It's so good. Like I'd never gotten that far in the game.
That's so funny.
In this game before. So to experience like little like kind of like, I don't know, cultural things or like musical things that we would know. Like it's not, you know, not something major, but just a cute little Easter egg, I guess.
Little nod,
for something that everyone going through the game is going to hear that at some point because you have to do this to progress. So yeah, it's kind of another cool thing. Like it's just, the game's just so full of like little charming things that are very neat that we don't really see anymore, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, I've never really played Star Tropics either. One of those, obviously we've heard about it. Like you said, I've probably heard podcasts about it too at some point, but I guess my NES sort of experience, like I've played NES games and stuff, but so, like more of these games that are actually more than just like arcade style, you know, sort of quick bite games, I don't have a ton of experience with. So yeah, it was really my first real, you know, sit down and play of it as well. But yeah, I mean, definitely very thankful to have that rewind button. Which is, and it's so nice and easy. Because, like, obviously, you know, with emulation on, like, the Wii U and stuff, you know, there was easy enough to do save states, but you still sort of had to know, like, oh, maybe a boss is upcoming here, let me save state and go. But, like, just as simple as literally, like, oh, I could just rewind to, like, 1 minute or 1 second before I got hit and I could just go the other way, or the 1 second before I freaking dunked myself in that pond.
I can't imagine using, like, I mean, I did not use the rewind, but I did use the save states like at the beginning of the boss. But it's like, I can't imagine like going through, especially with a live system, like, you know, like playing through, getting through the dungeon, you know, type thing, getting to the end, and then maybe having like 2 lives or 3 lives left, facing that boss 3 times, dying and starting. I mean, it's like, it is hardcore. Yeah. And not only that, you face the boss, you don't just get to start the boss again. You got to go through like a little mini gauntlet that's not easy just to get back to the boss, you know? So it's definitely a game that's like, I understand that, but like Zelda, like Link to the Past, you know, like doesn't have that kind of stuff, you know. No. It doesn't have, and so it just definitely was it was of its time. It was, you know, I think it definitely like a Star Tropics remake, you know.
I would love it. It's a theme that's really never explored in this genre. That's what I think makes it so unique. We don't get a lot of action adventure games that are set in an island theme with a submarine where you're going, you're island hopping and
it's
meeting all these natives.
It's so eclectic and cool.
Now, I do have something I wanted to bring up, and that's the fact that the game is made in Japan. It's only made for a Western audience, but the game is incredibly difficult and very, very tricky and deceptive. And but on the other hand, you have you have the fact that Lost Levels never came to the West initially, and instead we got the easier Super Mario USA, Super Mario Brothers 2, right? Like, it's just a funny thing where, like, Japan developed games would be like, oh, it's too hard for the West. We can't bring that over. We need to give them a simplified
baby
or an
mode.
Easier version.
Yeah.
But then Star Tropics is like, oh, you guys like hard games? Well, here's the hardest one. You know, it's just a funny kind of about face for that way of thinking about making games for a particular audience. I feel like maybe things had shifted or something like that. I don't know, but what do you guys think about that?
Well, that's interesting. Did Star Tropics ever release in Japan? I mean, I wonder if it released like on the, you know,
I don't think at the time.
I mean, it was only in America. Yeah, it was only U.S. and
there might be a virtual console version of it, but I don't know if it was even ever translated into Japanese officially. I'd have to look into it more. But
yeah, I'm seeing as far as the wiki page goes, it's got the European release almost. 8 months later, in August of a year and 8 months, 1992, it came out. Not showing any Japanese release there.
I mean, I didn't know if it'd be something
It was on the Wii Virtual Console in North America, and then PAL, Wii U in Europe, in Australia, and North America, the game, others, including the NES Classic. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, so there you go.
It's
so
never been released in Japan.
And
so isn't that fascinating?
That's
really?
A shame, because it's definitely a very Japanese-like game.
Even
on
the NES Classic, it is one of the games that is exclusive to the U.S. version.
Or what in the world?
Or the NAPAL version, I should say.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just really cool.
They can't handle Mike Jones's heat off the mound.
That's right. I believe I rented this as a kid. I don't actually remember playing it, but what I do remember is the Nintendo Power walkthrough on it.
I actually remember that more
than the actual game. I might even own the game now, because I think I might have picked it up in my 20s, seeing it at a store or something and thinking I'd like to play it, because I still have the Nintendo Power here too, and which is funny, because I ended up using a walkthrough from game FAQs, as opposed to I should have just
busted out the Nintendo Power.
Yeah, pull out the Nintendo Power.
Oh man, yeah, they're in boxes right now though. So otherwise I would have, but I remember just seeing it back then and being interested in it, but I probably was put off by the difficulty back then. I don't know how you play that without a rewind function. Like, it's just
so frustrating.
It is. It's hard. I mean.
And
people
were better
players back then.
Well, I was going to say, it's like, I mean, it's hard to an extent, but it's more frustrating when you just, like, fall into a lake, you know what I mean? Like, when you get a tough boss and you got to sort of learn the patterns, you know, you die a few times, you learn, and then you do, you know, you're like, okay, great, like, I feel better about this, you know, like, I was able to work through
it. You can figure it out.
But yeah, like, those cheap deaths and, like, the... Oh crap!
There's even
I went to aim left, but then I held it down for a second too long and I fell. You know, like, and now I'm bumping back.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's even some cheap actual unavoidable hits, which is I like the secret tunnel. One of them, because it kind of, when you go into a secret tunnel, it's not like in real time. It kind of does like a fast event kind of, and it spits you out kind of at the end in a way, you know what I'm talking about?
It's a weird transition, yeah,
and then you can't really do anything about it, and it pushed me out like where a bat just hit me, you know, and I just couldn't do anything about it. It's like, well, that's just not fair.
And some of the enemies do a ton of damage, like the mummies and stuff like that, like they take like half your hit points, right? Like, you can really only get hit once or twice by some of these enemies. Like, if some of the bosses can I don't know if they can knock out your whole health meter, but pretty darn close to it. So it's there's so many small elements about the game that conspire to make it incredibly difficult.
See,
and
that's really funny, because going into this, I mean, I'm glad I didn't know, because I mean, yes, it is definitely a super hard game, but I actually didn't know that going into the game.
Mm.
So I didn't really, I wasn't really viewing the game as like, this is ridiculously hard. Looking back on it now, it is ridiculously hard. Like, I totally get that. But like, it's funny how I was like, it was not entered into my brain as under the file of intense hard game. I've always just known it as like a, just an obscure game, not hard. But yeah, it definitely, it's very challenging and fun. I totally dig it. I think it unfortunately just has some of those things that make it age a little worse than games. Like, you know, like the difficulty, I think, is a very aging part of it, unfortunately. But I think, like, you know, the physics you can get used to, and they're actually kind of cool. The whole jumping on the platforms is so bizarre and weird, but it's actually pretty fun, the little gimmicks they put. It's very, it actually does feel, that part is very Nintendo-esque, and they definitely have some, you know, they have some cool Zelda puzzle-like charm with stuff, and you know, it's just kind of weird. It's just, it's kind of like the, it's like a, it's like Kid Icarus, just a weird spin-off of like a weird thing. I don't know. It's a cool game.
I love how when you step on the platforms, you see a little footprint, and that's how you know that's the one you've activated. Then you go and you press the other corresponding one that has a switch on it. It feels good to do that. It feels like there's like a tactile like sensation to it almost. Like you hear the,
noise
the click
too,
sound of the footprint, and then you go click on the button, and then the door opens up, or you know the wall explodes or whatever. Like that feels very satisfying to do. Like I think a lot. So the movement in this game feels weird because of the turning, the ability to turn your character before you actually move. But I think the hopping on the platforms actually feels very good. And I never felt like that those parts were necessarily unfair. Like I think if you kind of plan out your route and you could turn to fight the enemies, like I thought it was, you know, a good part of the progression, or a good part of the gameplay.
Well, there was that boss that required the two switches be hit.
Yeah, the lava boss.
You had to get real close to him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to walk. You basically have to walk in front of him to activate the second switch, and that was a tricky boss too. But I think the worst enemies or obstacles were the giant boulders, like the Indiana Jones kind of boulders. Because if they touch you, and they move really fast, if they touch you, it's an instant death.
All over,
right?
Crying.
Yeah. Oh man, those were frustrating. I mean, again, I'm totally abusing the rewind feature on that. But I mean, I'm sure I'm not alone on this podcast in thinking that I wish every old game that was re-released on like on a virtual console type service had a rewind feature. Like, is rewind feature not the best thing? Since sliced bread when it comes to re-releasing these games?
So
like,
good.
It's so good. Good.
And like I said, like it's. Not to say, like, the save states are bad. Like, obviously, those are great, too. But, like, the rewind just makes it so easy and so quick, you know? Not you don't have to go fumble through a menu. Just slap that button down for half a second and boom.
And it's a good amount of time, too. I think, what is it, like 60 seconds or 120 seconds or something like that? It didn't go back.
I don't know.
Like, it's very,
I was gonna say,
very forgiving.
I only ever went back, like, 4 seconds.
I think so.
Yeah.
Just right before
sometimes
the
death. Sometimes when I was exploring, I'd go back further, but...
Prevents you from save stating like every couple minutes. Like you don't feel like you have to save state all the time.
Yes,
like
yes.
You get a little bit of a breather with the rewind.
I think the worst dungeon was the one in the graveyard because it had so many false exits that would take you like outside of the dungeon. You had to start all the way back at the beginning, right? Like that was, and the reason I didn't know what to do there. And again, I don't know how you'd figure this out without a guide. You need to activate an item to reveal hidden enemies on the screen, right? Like there's these hidden ghosts on the screen, and if you don't activate like the torch or some other item, you don't even see. You get whacked, and you can't see them. Some of them are hidden in the wall. You have to kill.
Yeah, I was gonna say they're in the walls. You wouldn't be able to kill them without knowing where. Like you'd have to know.
I don't even think you can attack them. I don't think you can attack. I don't think they're vulnerable until you see them. I might be wrong about that, but. Yep. Yeah, you actually need to activate this torch item to reveal them, and if you don't do that, you're never going to get out of that dungeon. So the fact that the item is hidden in the menu, and then you have to activate it on certain screens that have these hidden enemies, like, there's a lot of little tricky things in this game. Like, it's just amazing that this was the game that designed purely for a Western audience, and that idea still boggles my mind.
Yeah, like you said, definitely different from their earlier philosophy, but you know what? I think it also probably did have to do with trying to get people not to rent these games because, like you said,
for sure.
In the beginning, it was very much, we need to dumb this down for those dumb Americans who stink at video games. And then it was very much like, okay, we can't just have these easy games that you could beat in one weekend because people rent it and never buy. And like you, mm-hmm. like I was saying before with the fact of the manual, that was like a very clear and like concerted effort to like, hey, we do this because you need the manual. And they actually, because they went to court trying to sue Blockbuster and these other, you know, rentals
for
renting, and then they were deemed to be able to rent the games, but they couldn't recreate the manuals because that was copyrighted, and then you were like, you know, that was the loophole of Nintendo being like, well, you can't copy our manuals, so we'll put something you need in the game in the manual. So that could also have been the philosophy of making it a little more difficult to the point where, yeah, you wouldn't be able to sit down unless if you really knew, obviously, everything, you know, you could get through the game relatively quick. But, you know, it was hard. You weren't going to sit down and beat it in one weekend. And if you were enjoying it, you got to go buy it.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that Star Tropics was Nintendo's middle finger to America.
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you, David. Very good.
We need to get someone from the UK. We need to talk to Banzu or someone else from the Switch Island, try to get them on the podcast again so we can ask them about Star Tropics in Europe, because I am curious about the reception of that game over there. I know the NES wasn't that big in Europe at any time, but the fact that the game it was one of the regions where that did get Star Tropics eventually, but so much of the game seems, you know, centered around an American audience. Like, what was the reception over there? Did people over there play it? I'd be curious about that as well. If anyone's listening that's from Europe or outside of North America and played Star Tropics, like, you know, where were you? What kind of reception did the game have around you? I'd love to know about stuff like that. So please hit us up.
Heck yeah.
Should we head into last call?
I'm trying to think if there's something else I want to. I really like this game. I think coming back to it, I'm really happy we had a chance to go back to it. I liked it better than I thought I was going to. Actually, I thought I was going to kind of have to force myself to play it, but it's a really enjoyable game. The ending part of the game where you not to spoil it necessarily, but it's pretty quick and it really shifts from puzzle solving to more action based gameplay. Like it's really if you're focusing heavily on the action in the final chapters, I think that's a kind of a nice change of pace. I did want to. I don't know if you guys have played the sequel, which is called Star Tropics 2: Zoda's Revenge. Are any of you familiar with that game? It's NES. It's on NES. Came out in.
It's like one of the last. Yep. One of the last Nintendo developed games for NES.
Came out in 1994, if I'm not mistaken.
It's very, very late.
So,
it's very similar.
It's similar, but it kind of does away with the island theme, right? Instead, Mike is kind of traveling through time, sort of, or traveling around the world. There's this book, this almanac, or this kind of encyclopedia, sort of, that he flips through. And it teleports him to different places or periods in time. Like you go to Egypt and you speak to Cleopatra, or you
Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, Sherlock Holmes in England. Yeah, like it's kind of teleporting you around the world, and it does away a little bit with the puzzle element inside the dungeons. There's not as much of the stepping on the platforms to activate a switch. It's more actiony.
You know what's interesting too? It's called Zoda's Revenge. Star Tropics 2, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I wonder why they sort of buried the lead, you know, as far as Star Tropics isn't the first thing you see when you see the title. And especially if you look at the box art, it's very much Zoda's Revenge is like the big forefront. And then, you know, upon further inspection, you do see, obviously, Star Tropics 2, so... Sort of interesting.
I mean, there's no tropics, right? There's no tropics. It's all over the world. Like, I don't even know if there is specifically like an island themed area that you visit. So, it is a sequel because it's the same characters, but and a lot of the same abilities and gameplay. But it's not the theme or the identity of Star Tropics, I think, changes quite a bit in the sequel. I can understand why they made Star Tropics 2 the subtitle. It's more of a focus on the action gameplay, I'd say. At any rate, I was watching a speed run of the second game today. I don't think I've ever really played it. I hope that one comes to the Nintendo Switch Online service as well, because I would like to try it.
Well, you can grab it on your Wii Virtual Console.
I might even and be on Wii 3DS U, Virtual Console, too.
Let's see. It was released Wii Virtual Console on North America And then in PAL regions, it was released on the Wii U Virtual Console in Europe and Australia, and then eventually in North America a year and change later. So you can grab it on your Wii U. Probably be the best way.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, sounds like that. That's not good.
NES emulation on the Wii U is not very good.
Yeah, but I mean, it's better than finding a copy.
unless I go to David's house and dig up his NES and his Star Tropics 2, I'm out of luck. So,
Casey, do you remember when we recorded the Donkey Kong?
Oh my, talking good to the challenge. Land. Yeah, sure do.
The difference we had, where I was doing it on my Wii U and you did it on the what was it on the NES?
I forget.
But anyway, it was ridiculous. Sure. It's disgusting, the emulation on Wii U for NES. But I don't know if that's a game by game thing. But yeah, I'm interested in playing. I definitely want to go through and beat Star Tropics. I think obviously having the save states is interesting, because I feel like this game I could play it through with save states, kind of, you know, play it through and then maybe try to go through it again with minimum save states and work my way through that. You know what I mean? But because it is just a little too hard. You know, you gotta cut some people. You gotta cut me some slack. You know, it's tough. So
we're all getting old.
Yeah. Ain't nobody got time for that.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol. Get going.
Well, speaking of getting old, my last call is kind of in regards to that. It's I was thinking playing a PlayStation game, actually, that my tastes in games are dwindling. Like,
they're honing in.
I don't know if dwindling. Yeah, exactly. Like they're becoming more defined or refined, I guess. And I was curious with you guys if
down?
Definitely filtering. I know exactly what I want to play and what
they
I don't
call
play
you
these
the
days.
Filtered gamer and for I was no curious reason.
That's are you right. telling us, David, you want to That's move the, you want to move up the Earthbound episode and do that next week? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if I know that. Okay. But I'm curious if you guys we've all been playing a lot of games the past few years. It's like probably into the hundreds for all
for
of
sure.
us. And I'm curious if you guys are the same. Are you now kind of getting to the point where you know what your tastes are and you're kind of leaning towards those games more often, or do you try to keep your horizons broad?
Well, it's funny. I think when, like, I was younger and I was first really that sort of that first summer where you get a job, right, and you're making money and you have zero obligations as far as, you know, financial commitment, you know, so it's all just profit. And you're just a dumb kid spending all your money on DS games. You know, I bought like every and any game under the sun. So like, I feel like at that point, like I was just playing whatever. And then eventually, you sort of hone in, you refine into like, all right, I love RPGs, you know, and I play tons of them. And then I think that was, you know, a big part of my life. Obviously, it still is now. But I think having done the podcast where it's like you sort of always need to talk about a game more or less each week, obviously you can't just play a single RPG for 2 months. You know, it just wouldn't, no one wants to hear about Xenoblade Chronicles for 8 weeks in a row, even though it's an amazing game. But so I think, you know, doing the podcast, being on the site, like I've definitely branched out a little bit more. You know, I wasn't really into roguelites or anything like that, and then I sort of fell in love with that. And even within the RPG arena, you know, I've been playing more action RPGs now. So I think I still try and keep it broad, although, you know, you still sort of fall back on what you know, and that's sort of RPGs for me. So it's like that's always the comfort food. But I do try to still branch out and play some different games here and there, you know.
That was a whole bunch of rambling, Casey, for pretty much I don't really know answer.
I took well what I just said, yeah.
I heard was I only play World of Warcraft. That's what I'd heard him say, so.
Well, that's weird that you didn't just say the same thing Perry did, but
I'm about to if you let him finish.
Well, yeah, I think I answered that well. Do you lean towards no, I still broaden out, but at the end of the day, there are that still those comfort games that you fall back upon.
So you could have
said yes.
What
do you have to say, Mr. Rambler Jambler?
Well, if I was Casey, I could just say yes and no, and then I would have been done with that conversation. But no, I'm just kidding. I'm just yanking your chain.
I don't play games. I just buy them and put them on my shelf in their plastic containers.
Shut up.
A lot of times it's because I already have the game digitally. I think that, you know, it's interesting because I have found out that I wouldn't say that my like I wouldn't generalize and say like go down and say that like I know what I like and then so I'm kind of going towards that. I have realized games that I like more like that I really like. For instance, kind of like in the past couple months, I've just realized tactical strategy, like RPGs or you know whatever they call them. I call them tactical RPGs. Are really just my main jam, but I really like all games. I mean, I really like to you know to open my mind and see you know everything, and I think I do that on a pretty good basis. But I have no like so basically I have filtered. I've noticed how I like certain games more, but I like don't use that as an excuse to not play other games. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'll go next. I think that there's. I mean, it is a yes and no. One thing I was thinking about when we were talking about this question is, I really love being able to go back to old games that I never got a chance to play or I never got to finish. Old NES games, Super Nintendo games, whatever, what have you, like, or games like from a series where maybe I've played one entry in the series, but I haven't played the rest. So, for example, today I was on the PlayStation Store and I noticed that maybe I saw a tweet about it or something, but I was looking at all the Ease games. So Casey and I are big fans of Ease 8, which came to Switch a couple years ago. And I know that Ease 9 just got announced for Switch as well. And now I'm like, okay, you know, what about the older games like Ease 1 and 2, Memories of Celceta, Oath and Fal'Ghana? Like, it seems like a lengthy series that I've never really played much of before. So what's happening is as I play newer entries in a series that come to Switch or come to PlayStation 4 or something like that, I'm getting an opportunity to, like, really get into a new series. And so I end up wanting to go back to games that I missed out on after realizing the series could actually be really good, and I want to see kind of where it started or how things tie together. So are my horizons broadening? I wouldn't say that. Like, I play more indie games now than I used to since getting into the reviews game, but I'm moving away from AAA games. Like, I'm not interested in Last of Us 2, Ghost of Tsushima. I might play the sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn. I'm probably not going to play, even though I played the first one. Like, I think I'm moving away from AAA kind of action or 3D, third person action games, because it seems like that's all of what the next gen is focusing on. Like, instead, I'm gravitating towards the smaller games that are coming to Switch or older games that are kind of getting remastered or getting put into compilations and put on Switch or put on PlayStation. Like, I'm really interested in playing older games now, I would say. So that's kind of my answer. I know it's a little bit roundabout, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of with Casey. A yes and no, for sure.
You and me both. We're just rambling. We're taking a book out of Perry's book. We're just ramblers.
You're born rambling men.
Yeah, I'm kind of around there, I guess. The one thing I know is that this is the last zombie game I'm going to be playing. Because, yeah. Oh, man.
You're not going to play Resident Evil Remake 2?
No, I'm done with the scary zombie games.
Oh, because it's too scary. I mean, because it's scary. Is that why?
Because he's a baby.
No,
it's just I don't know. Like I guess the jump scares don't. Yeah, like it's funny. The like with The Last of Us 2, there I was reading a review and they were talking about. It was the game was easier at the beginning when they were killing zombies, and then it became more difficult for them when it was actual people that you're killing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like the exact opposite, where I'm like, it's so much easier to fight the humans in this game than it is the zombies, because I'm like, they're so gross.
Yeah, David's like, I'll mow down as many people as I want, but God, stay away from me, clickers.
My goodness, David's a psychopath.
I like to kill humans rather than zombies. I think the one thing that playing all these games is really refined is, like, you can't always judge a book by its cover, but I'm getting pretty good at picking out, like, games that I know I'm going to enjoy or not going to enjoy. Like, I can watch the trailer and be like, okay, I'm pretty sure. I would say, like, 95 times out of 100, I can watch a trailer or a few minutes of a game and know whether I will enjoy it or not. And, like you said, at the beginning of the review, like, starting reviews and stuff, it was definitely, like, just consume as much as I can. But I know lately, like, you get a few, you know, 5-6s in a row and you're... The motivation falls away pretty
a little disheartening.
I mean, we can't all be Justin Nation, you know, like he's
yeah.
really,
no, we can't.
Really pushing through on some of those games. So
he's one of a kind, gracious. That man.
Yes.
I don't know how he does it. I think I can do one of those like every 6 or 7, but not every other.
Guys, I think that we need to all have a T-shirt that has Justin Nation on it, and then it says underneath it, "I don't know how he does it."
Perry, you're assuming I'm not wearing one of those right now.
That's right. I was assuming that.
I'll send you some pics. Don't worry.
Send some more. I know you were going to send me some anyway, but.
I was. I'll add it in the bundle.
Put the shirt back on for
yeah.
I like that question, David. That's a good discussion. It's almost like I wish we could have done a whole podcast about that.
I mean, we probably could. I feel like
maybe next time
this answer could change every few months. Even, you know, just as our priorities change, as things in our lives change, like
seasonal
that,
gaming.
Like having the pandemic, having kids, you know, what's going on with work, all of these things kind of conspire, contribute to
absolutely.
what your preferences are, right? Like
absolutely.
Perry, I know you're with me on this, like playing the Switch in portable mode, you know, playing on that Switch Lite. Like I all my gaming is like that now. I don't even want to turn on my PlayStation. I want to play Yakuza 2. I want to play, you know, go back to the old Final Fantasy games, but I want to play everything in my portable Switch Lite, right? Like that's all I'm doing now.
So it's funny because the first like 2 years of my Switch, that's all I did because I went to work. I didn't work from home. Now I work from home, so there's never a reason for me to do that. But that's an example of how even just in the past few years, how it completely changed, you know, it completely changed from the beginning to the end. So exactly. So I think it's a huge discussion to be had because we should say that for a different time, but I was going to say, how someone like you and I can play a different game. And if I'm playing this game, like on my huge projector downstairs, you know, like with the sound up and it's quiet and I can be all invested. And then contract that with you playing on, you know, like with your kids around and on handheld, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like what a huge different way to experience a game. And like, it will honestly give you a worse or a better impression. You know what I mean? So it's really interesting, but yeah, we'll have to talk about
it. It lets you enjoy the same experience in your own way, to your own comfort level. And I think that's what just such a magical thing about the Switch. I mean, we've said this idea to death, of course, but just the fact that no matter what your life situation is, this console will fit into it somehow. Right?
Absolutely.
All these old games that we've missed, they're all like the BioShock collection, the XCOM 2, like these old games that
game is on the Switch now.
And they're going to keep doing that, right? Like as the new generation begins at the end of this year, Nintendo, I think, is going to be leaning very hard into getting more of these previous gen games, these remasters, collections, compilations, what have you. More of those are going to come to Switch. And so everything you've missed, you're going to have an opportunity to come back to. I love it for that right now. Like that's where I'm leaning, is these older games that I missed out on that now I can play them not on a PC, not on a PS4 and a big TV, which might be an ideal situation, but I just don't have those opportunities anymore. So give me these games on a Switch Lite, you know, like love that.
There you go.
All right, is it wrap up time, David?
I think so.
We got to save the rest of this topic for a full episode because I think that'd be a really good idea.
Let me just put it this way, Casey. Yep. I guess all of us, besides Jordan, have to work today.
Yeah, I got to get up in 5 hours.
Sorry, dudes.
So Yeah, we can wrap
Jordan's
this up.
Jordan's like, what are you talking about? It's not even dessert time yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I got my decaf boiling right now.
I've been eating my dessert this whole podcast. I don't know about you, but... okay, so obviously we want to thank Casey and Perry for joining us. Another fun crossover episode with you two guys. Congratulations again on getting to 200 episodes of the Talk Nintendo podcast. Such a huge achievement. We're obviously happy to be part of that and hanging out with you guys on
absolutely.
A regular basis.
Thanks for helping us get there, you know?
Yes,
we couldn't have got
you,
there
thank
without
thank
you two, so...
Absolutely. So, yeah, you can look forward to hearing David and I and Neil joining Casey and Perry on their 200th episode for one of the segments. That was always really fun, Mystery Reversary. Thank you to everyone out there listening. You know, we're at 65 episodes. We're still, you know, inching our way towards 200. I'm sure we'll get there one day. But, you know, if you're listening right now and you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please do that. You can leave us a review on your podcast app of choice, helps with visibility. And if you've got someone that you know who likes RPGs or maybe is very interested in Star Tropics for some reason, let them know about the podcast. Let them know about the Thirsty Mage. You know, we want to get new people listening all the time. That would be great for us and hopefully for everybody else out there. Casey and Perry, where can people find the Talk Nintendo podcast, or if they want to talk to you guys on Twitter, want to?
Well, you're going to want to go over to, you know, you can get the show on any of the podcast catchers, if you will. Just search my Talk Nintendo podcast. On Twitter, we are Talk Nintendo Pod. That's Talk Nintendo.
P-O-D.
Boom shakalaka.
That was incredibly
boom,
sexy,
here
Perry.
Comes the boom.
Thank you for that.
Ready or not.
Kevin James?
Yeah, that's the song. Yep, from the movie. And the name.
I've totally lost my train of thought here. David, what stuff have you and Casey been working on for the Thirsty Mage website? I know you had a video up to cover the, I don't even remember the name of the event. New Game Plus Expo was the name of the event. I know you guys talked about some games on there.
We were talking about Eve's 9 on its way to Switch. And we also have the video should be up by now where we actually talked about Ninjala, which is a new free-to-play game on the Switch.
Yes,
oh,
fantastic.
You guys did you guys play it or just talk about it?
Both.
Yes, we did.
Oh, I need to listen to that.
So you?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. I might be talking about it on the show as well, but yeah, definitely check it out on the old Vidya.
Yeah, so you can find those videos on our website, thethirstymage.com, or on our YouTube channel, The Thirsty Mage. If you've got feedback for us, or you'd like to request a game, or share some feedback, share some comments on Star Tropics, for example, you can email david@thethirstymage.com. Let us know. We love hearing from listeners. We're always really excited to see what people are thinking about, or you know their feelings about games, or their experiences with these games. We know you guys have played a lot of these old games that we cover on the show, so we love to hear from our fans and the audience out there. So yeah, please get in touch with David, or you can find us on Twitter. I'm at @riskman64. David is at @filteredgamer, and of course the podcast handle as well, @thethirstymage. I think that does it for us for this week. We are going to be talking about Cosmic Star Heroine next week, which is also on Switch. Paige is going to be joining us for that, so that'll be a fun episode. I need to start my next playthrough of that game. Another short game, kind of like Star Tropics. So if you haven't played Cosmic Star Heroine, it's got a lot of kind of Chrono Trigger feel to it. It's a sci-fi game, kind of a quick, fast-paced RPG. So that's definitely one you want to check out. And you'll be able to listen to the episode next week. So that'll be fun. Again, Casey and Perry, thank you for joining us. Hope you guys have a wonderful 200th episode, wonderful celebration with all of that, and we'll have to talk about the next crossover episode soon. I don't
absolutely.
Know if we have something in the works yet, but we'll come up with
Quiz
we'll come up with something.
64, baby.
Please don't even joke about
that. We're gonna play that, but I don't think we'll be able to get Perry to play that one.
If Perry finds like. From his Craigslist roundup, if he finds someone selling like 4 copies of Quest 64 and he's willing to ship them, I'll happy to cover shipping, but God,
let's
I don't
just
want
put
to
it this
hold
way.
On, let me get on to Craigslist
happening.
And make a post real quick. For
I almost bought the game on eBay like a month ago,
I mean,
almost, when we were talking about it on Slack.
Dude,
but
it can't be expensive.
How much is it?
It's not actually. I think it, like Canadian, I think it was like $25.
Look at this. $6.99 or best offer $5 shipping. 99 cents for
I'd be down.
Shipping. Or look at this one. This one's $100.
Hold on. Okay, so I want the one that's $6. Perry can have the one that's $100.
I don't
okay?
know. This person must just not think. They must think they've got some condition is brand new.
Oh, that's
out of
why.
That, out of
that's
box.
Cool.
Yeah,
actually,
right.
That's cool.
It is not.
Oh, but
brand
it's out
new.
Of box.
If it's not shrink wrapped, it's not brand new.
No, dude, like, I'm looking at this. This thing is used as they come. This guy's a dirty liar. He'd fit
okay,
right
so
on
heard...
with the dirty mage.
What's his handle? Yeah, does it say
correct,
David Lloyd?
He'll correct me.
Yeah.
David's pirating copies.
Well,
of
here,
Quest 64
now,
to sell
a factory sealed one for $1.50.
I knew
hey,
it.
The market is full of buyers and sellers, and if someone's willing to buy, then.
But they're all Perry, though. It's just Perry buying them for some reason.
I don't.
So Perry, you correct me if I'm wrong. You said you would be down to play Quest 64.
If
is
I can
that
get
correct?
It for $10, yeah, I'll do it.
Okay, so it might not be the next crossover, ladies and gentlemen out there, but there will be a Quest 64 crossover. It's in the works. It's in the. It's going to happen at some point. So
under one condition.
Oh, he's backpedaling.
It has to. I'm not backpedaling. Is that I want to also label it as an "I demand you" segment on Talk Nintendo.
So I'll allow it.
It's a dirty mage.
Okay,
I demand
okay.
you, which is essentially what these are. So
that seems fair. Well, to be fair, I've been demanding games of you, and in fact, I just remembered the next game I demanded of us, and that's River City Ransom. So maybe River City Ransom, and then Quest 64. But we'll talk about it. We'll get there. Yes. Casey's sharing all these links in our Skype chat
that's
now.
I hear all those sounds on my end.
There it is, boys.
I might actually buy the game tonight if we're committing to this. So you heard it here first, everybody. We've confirmed that we're going to be playing Quest 64 at some point this year. So everyone break out the cartridge that you already own, no doubt, because that was such a hot commodity back then.
Christmas comes early, boys.
And we didn't even have to lose an E3 bet because there is no E3 this year. So we're all losers,
yeah, right.
I suppose.
I can't believe we let you get away with that one, Jordan. My goodness.
At any rate, we had a great time talking about Star Tropics. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back at you next week with Cosmic Star Heroine. Casey and Perry will talk to you guys soon, and have a good night.
See you later, you hosers.
Adios.
Good night.